93, and I said, you know, you probably...
Good evening, everyone. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of yesterday before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the March 28th minutes. Any additions, corrections, or changes? Seeing none, all in favor of the approval of the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have four items tonight. The first is a change of the budget resolution. Then we'll take up the legacy bill, and then the agriculture bill and the public safety bill. Members, I've got just one small change, which I think we did last year or 2 years ago, to the budget resolution. I'll move the A11 amendment, which sets a budget target for the Minnesota Correctional Industries Revolving Fund of $108,906,000. This is MinCor. It's commonly called MinCor. We had, I believe, set a target for it either last year or the year before. I don't recall which. But members, I'd appreciate your support in setting a limit on the money that can be spent out of this particular fund. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, whether the Democrats or the Republicans have been in control of this House, we have typically gone to MinCor to fund projects that were necessary. I think it's interesting, Mr. Chair, that in the current bill, it takes about $2 million from the proposal or from the from MinCor after we offered the amendments to fund the items that were of a priority to the House DFL members of the Public Safety Committee. Now, this resolution is coming forward, but Mr. Chair, there is a statutory amount that is required to be in this fund, and I don't believe that this budget resolution meets that statutory number. So I think that this committee might want to take a look at the statutory requirement for how much is supposed to be in that fund.
Well, I don't know if I can ask Mr. Marks. Do you know anything about that issue, Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom cites a statutory amount. I think it states a minimum amount that needs to stay as a balance, but I don't know what that number is.
Representative Hillstrom, can you give us what that number is?
Mr. Chair, I'm consulting with the Department of Corrections, who is here. Mr. Chair, they don't like it when I spend money out of the fund either.
Okay. Well, yeah, members, I guess I'd be surprised because, I mean, we're proposing to spend $2 million of a fund, and there's $108,906,000 in the target here, so we're not dipping much into the fund. Representative Carlson, did you have something you wanted to bring up while they were researching that?
No, I'll wait. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, maybe, Mr. Chairman, with what we did in the committee last night and what is happening here, aside from the $2 million, it appears that we're putting a cap in place. And I guess I would point out that, in spite of the department being behind me here, that this is just another step in preventing the minority in the future from offering any amendments. And you did give some dates, or Mr. Marks did, where it had been done a time or two in the past. But I do have to express concern that it does prevent the minority from providing any alternatives when these bills go through and you put the cap in place for various special funds that might be used for a good purpose or might be an alternative amendment from the minority caucus. While we're waiting for the department, I just point out that not too many years ago, before Ways and Means was in fact created, which was in the mid-80s, a lot of people think it was here forever, but it wasn't. We never had a budget resolution per se. We would, both caucuses, because there were times when we were in the minority and the majority prior to the mid-80s, any member could basically get up and move an amendment, and it was up to the majority party to argue it down for whatever reason, you know, that it would be too expensive, that it would hurt the budget, or whatever reason it might have been. But you did have that right. And I guess what I'm expressing is a concern, and I've sat in the chair you're sitting in,
that it does make it much more difficult for any individual, majority or minority, to come forward with an amendment that they might be interested in a given subject area. And I know we've operated that way for probably now about 30 years, but it's not the way we always operated. And I guess I'm saying that it was much more democratic. Yeah, for the majority party, it was responsible for balancing the budget. You might have had some tougher votes in a committee or on the House floor, but members did have that opportunity to bring an issue that they were concerned about forward.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, Representative Carlson, I guess I would only say that I hear what you're saying, but, you know, we do have $2-some billion being spent in this bill, and so there's certainly a lot of different places a person can look to take money and then reinvest in some other place if they do want to offer amendments.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm expressing more a concern not about necessarily the current budget that's before us, just the way through the years, through my time here, the Minnesota House has gravitated toward a more top-down kind of approach to the budget. And I'm just saying there was a time when, in my view, that it was more democratic. When you think about our other rules, you know, other groups that operate that require a second, you know, here in the Minnesota House of Representatives, any individual can put a question before the body. You know, that's much more democratic. You know, it's not going to die to the lack of a second under Masons. Our House rules now dealing with the budget make it much more difficult for anybody on either side of the aisle to put a question before the body that they feel strongly about that would deal with the budget. So I'm just saying that if we look at it historically, there was a time when we were more democratic than we are today. And that's all I want to say.
Sure. Okay. Representative Liebling, then Hillstrom. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So under Minnesota Statute 241.27, it requires that the department maintain 6 months' worth of revenue, income and spending that comes into the fund. And currently they're approximately $4 million below that statutory requirement. And then the bill before us takes $2 million. So by putting this cap in place, the department will actually be approximately $6 million short of where they should be under the statute. So, Mr. Chair, currently this resolution will not comply with Minnesota statutes.
And so you're saying that the department is also not complying with Minnesota statutes as is today?
Mr. Chair, the last bill also took money from them, which caused them to be out of compliance. The last public safety budget bill took money from NCORP, knowing that they would be putting them out of compliance with the statute.
Okay. Well, I think what I'll do at this point is let me withdraw that amendment and let us take a chance to look at the language, Representative Hillstrom, and thanks for bringing that to our attention, and we'll move on to the next item of business while we investigate that a little further.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Gunther moves that House File 707 be referred to the General Register. Representative Gunther, I don't know, Representative Gunther, do you want to deal with some of the amendments right now or do you want to present the bill?
Well, I'll deal with the A14 amendment, which basically is the housekeeping amendment, allows the staff to make any corrections necessary and kind of common to most bills.
Okay, Representative Gunther moves the A14 amendment. Is there any discussion to the A14 amendment? No discussion. All in favor of the A14 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A14 amendment is adopted. And then, Representative Erdahl, I believe you have an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the A15 amendment.
Representative Erdahl moves the A15 amendment. Representative Erdahl, please explain the amendment.
I'll do that. And the A17, I don't believe we will be offering this.
All right.
This takes
the A17-328.
Right.
All right. That won't be offered. Okay. Representative Erdahl moves the A15 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it was brought to our attention, actually, when we had our walkthrough on the legacy amendment earlier this week that actually had been something that we probably should have included and didn't, and that was some funding for the state archaeologist. I was contacted by the Department of Administration who asked if we could remedy that, and that's what this amendment does. This is for burial of human bones that are discovered as in road construction or through erosion or whatever, and these bones presently of about 100 people are stored at Hamline University, and they would like to dispose of them in a proper manner, meaning through burial or whatever. And so the Department of Administration has requested through the for their department, for the state archaeologist, that $107,000 be appropriated from the legacy fund for that purpose. And so we are taking it from what seemed like a likely source, the funding of the Minnesota Historical Society, to take care of this particular situation. That's that is what it does. Just because you might wonder, what are you going to do with $107,000 for 100 collections of human bones? The OSA staff, that's the Office of the State Archaeologists, $5,000. Contract services, $44,000. Equipment fees, lab supplies and fees, $11,500. DNA testing at $2,500 each, $25,000. C-14 testing at $700 each, $7,000. Reburial fees, $15,000 for a total of $107,500. That is my amendment.
Will there be any books written about the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I can pretty much guarantee that there will be a book written about that amendment and a lot of other things that happened around here.
All right.
The names will be changed to protect the guilty.
Discussion on the A-15 amendment. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rudolph, thank you. I love the fact that you pay attention to these issues, and I appreciate that. But my question is, I'm not that familiar with the legacy funds and all that. I've never served on the committee, but I do understand that we're supposed to not be supplanting other money. So my question to you is this something that is normally funded through, how do we usually do this? And, you know, is this something that doing it under the legacy fund, is that going to be something that you feel is justifiable given that we're supposed to be supplementing, not supplanting?
Representative Rudolph. Mr. Chairman and Representative Neiman, well, first of all, we have funded the state archaeologist for things before in the past with legacy funding. So there's a precedent of money going to the state archaeologist. And in this case, these bones, one assemblage of bones, one person who is in Hamline was found in 1856. So she's still sitting in Hamline. I don't know in the past what's been happening to these bones. I know that there are 100 bones of 100 people in a drawer at Hamline, and it would be proper to do something with them. And in terms of supplying or supplementing, again, beyond that, I don't know what was happening with those bones, but nothing's happened for a heck of a long time.
Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just have one other question for Representative Erdahl. So are these rich dead people? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered how the bill's author feels about taking it from the Historical Society. Do you have a point of view?
Author, Mr. Chair Gunther.
Representative Hausman, the Historical Society kind of indicated they wish we'd find another home to do this, and we had to give the money to the Department of Administration, who the state archaeologists work through, and they are an account of ours. They do watch some of the things that we have, oversee some of our accounts. So we just simply took the money from the Historical Society, and we paid it to the Department of Administration for taking care of the state archaeologists. And by the way, I think that one person, they did find relatives, great-grandkids or somebody.
They did.
Of that person that he was talking about, and they were thrilled. Point so up. That makes it kind of worth it almost by itself.
Any other discussion to the bill? To the amendment.
Quick.
Seeing none, all in favor of the A15 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A15 amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? All right, discussion to the bill.
What?
Representative Lublin.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question about the amendment that we passed earlier, the A14, because I didn't have it in my hands at the time, and it was described as being just technical, I think. And I'm, as I'm looking at it, I just wondered if it doesn't. I haven't matched it up with the bill, but it doesn't look like it's just correcting things. And I wonder if it was
allows
described
the nonpartisan staff to make corrections on the bill when the thing is open. So if there is an error we find later, they then have permission to make those corrections.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Gunther. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think that's what the bill, what the amendment does, at least not the one that's in my hand, unless I'm just really misunderstanding something here.
Mr. Walls, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, is your question to the dollar amount change or to other changes within the amendment?
Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, just are we all looking at the same amendment? It's the A14. That's the one we're talking about, right?
A14.
Yes.
Yeah, so the A14 amendment, so it has things, so it doesn't say anything about allowing anything to be corrected. It just, it has some, let me just take a look at one of the lines here. So, for example, it has on line 1.5 of the amendment, it says page 71, line 20 of the bill, delete Springboard for the Arts and insert the State Agricultural Society and the City of Savage. So those aren't the kinds of things that you usually see in an amendment that's just authorizing corrections to be made.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Walls.
Liebling, my understanding of that language change was that the Springboard for the Arts was going to be the recipient which would administer the grant, and they did not wish to be, so the grantee brought forward another organization that will perform that function.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair,
yeah, Representative Liebling.
I'm not debating any of the substance of the amendment. I just was curious because it didn't seem to be as it was described. It's making changes to the bill, but it's not just authorizing the staff to correct, make technical corrections, as I was sort of understanding, you know. But
I think you're saying, Representative Liebling, that there are technical corrections in the amendment as opposed to language authorizing the staff to make technical corrections.
Well, Mr. Chair, that appears to be what it is. I mean, I wouldn't know from this that they are technical.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what is being explained, that these are considered technical. But it isn't as it was described to us, which was the bill authorizes the. I guess I misunderstood. When we talk about it like that, it's sometimes we have, say, a reviser's instruction, and I was understanding it was more like that, but that's all. If it is what it was intended to be, then I'm fine with it.
Sure. If you have some other questions about any of the items on them, feel free to ask Representative Liebling.
I think I might have misspoke. It's corrections that have been made as well as.
Thank you.
Okay. Other discussion to House File 707. Representative Wagenius.
You know my concern with this bill. Representative Gunther.
I certainly do, and I'm certainly looking into ways that we can help get that taken care of. I know wellhead protection is very important to you, and I know that by taking money and moving around money in the Clean Water for buffers and for the governor's CREP proposal is not something that I dreamed up that I wanted to have as a thing I wanted to do, but it's something that I thought was very necessary and is maximizing the amount of money we can use in the future for CREP and other very worthwhile programs. And wellhead protection, I will work on that in the future, I promise.
Representative Gaines.
Representative Gunther and I have shared concerns about this portion of this bill with the drinking water. At least over $6 million was taken out of drinking water protection. Some people say it's more, but that doesn't matter. It's still $6 million. Over $6 million. And, of course, the problem here is the drinking water problems are mainly in districts on the other side of the aisle. So I find that interesting. But I do want to say, Representative Gunther, taking this money, drinking water money, out of legacy was not the governor's proposal. The governor proposed funding CREP with bonding money. He proposed $30 million for bonding. And so I think it's a little, we have to be a little careful about how we characterize the governor's position here.
Other discussion, Representative Halsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the thing that surprises me, I don't serve on these committees either, so I just, as I was preparing for this evening, began to do some reading. And I don't know if the Outdoor Heritage Council and the Clean Water Council are even in the audience, but I remember just a few years ago when we made little tweaks to their recommendations, and oh my gosh, we almost started World War III. And these groups have been so strangely quiet that I have not heard from anyone. So for some reason, they've done their, you know, all those groups met and did all their research and studying and maybe visiting, I don't know, and made their recommendations, and there are fairly significant changes here. So we do CREP and others at their expense. And I wonder what it says to them when they start their work this next year. I mean, have we started down a path where it's going to be hard for them to know how much time to put into it?
Representative Gufford.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I was in fear and trembling when I went to see him afterwards. I tried to do anything I could to make it better for them, but it was amazing to me how they said, we want to do it. We want to do it all now. We want the 5% and everything taken care of all at once so we have it behind us. And I was very grateful, and I appreciated both the Clean Water Council and the Sarge Sams in how understanding they were. We did get a fairly substantial hit on the governor's CREP program because the federal government is leveraging that money, and it's very important for erosion and other things that happen in greater Minnesota. So I think I appreciate what both those organizations did, and they were very understanding. And I've heard what you said, that's why I was a little bit worried about it. But they were, maybe they were nice to a person that started this committee the first time. You know, I've never been on a legacy committee, and I think they were trying to make it maybe easy on a rookie.
Other discussion? Seeing no discussion, Representative Gunther, would you like to make some closing comments?
Well, I would appreciate your vote, and I would renew my motion to have House File 707 be passed and sent to the House floor as amended.
All right. Representative Gunther renews the motion that House File 707, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 707, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Members, next we're going to take up Representative Hamilton's bill, House File 895, the Omnibus Agriculture Bill. Representative Hamilton moves that House File 895 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Hamilton, I know you've got a couple of what I think are pretty technical amendments. Do you want to take those now?
Mr. Chairman, we can. And I'm going to look to our minority leader of the committee, Representative Poppy. I haven't had a chance to visit with you, so I want to explain the amendments and if you're okay with them. If not, I don't need to offer them, but I want, out of courtesy, look to you for some direction here as well. The first one, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the A-12 amendment.
Representative Hamilton moves the A-12 amendment.
Now, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we do have a couple different programs, the Farm Business Management Program and the Dairy Development Profitability Enhancement and Business Planning Program. And what I'm asking here is if there's any synergies between the two programs, if they can work together. And we're looking at basically through MEALSI just bring the two groups together and see, like I said, if we can share resources or streamline or anything like that. So that's what I'm attempting with this amendment through MEALSI. And again, I'm looking through the minority lead here. So that's the A-12 amendment.
Representative Poppy, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be acceptable of that amendment.
Okay, other discussion to the A-12 amendment. See no discussion. All in favor of the A-12 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A-12 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd also like to move the A-9 amendment. And this amendment was brought to me by Representative Clark. And we do have some language in here that I'll explain a little more as it pertains to urban youth education, urban agriculture, and community development. And what she's wanting is to have the department in consultation with the urban ag stakeholders when it comes to reviewing the grants and any of the projects, reviewing to administer this. So this is an amendment brought forward by Representative Karen Clark. And I ask for your support.
Okay. Representative Hamilton moves the A-9 amendment. Any other discussion to the A-9 amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the A-9 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A-9 amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Hamilton, can you present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll go through here. When it comes to rider language, I'll just refer to it as rider language. If you want me to give you any more detail, I'll be happy to do that. On page 2.13, we have $250,000 a year going to transfer to a pollinator habitat and research account. And what we did is we brought in Dean Brian Boer and Marla Spivak, who is the lead researcher when it comes to pollinators. And so we're asking the University of Minnesota to be doing research on this so that we can actually get solid data back, because we don't even know what type of habitat to plant for natural bees and or honeybees. So that's an appropriation going to the University of Minnesota, establishing that account. The second provision in here is $300,000 a year for noxious weeds. This is a Cherry Anderson bill. This would direct the money directly to counties to where they can address the noxious weed proposals. The next line item is 2.27. That's for the hemp program. That's a Representative Franzen bill. And then after that, on 2.31, is $250,000 a year for pest pathogens. This was actually brought forward a governor's initiative and the Department of Agriculture. We didn't fund it to the level of the governor, but we did establish the account there. On page 3, that's all rider language until you get down to 3.33. There's a $30,000 appropriation each year. And this is a Representative Fabian language, and this is pertains to compensation for crop damage by elk and or wolves on that piece. Then we have on page 4, the rest of that is base rider language. On page 5 is rider language. On page 6, the change here is to the agreed language where we had potato and wild rice researchers. We did lower the dollar amounts on that. for the to where they're equal, $350,000 apiece. I am working very closely with some of the wild rice individuals. They do have some concerns on that, and I will continue working with them as we go forward. Avian influenza, the one change there is up to $1 million. If they don't use $1 million for research on that, they can use it for other research initiatives. On page 7, let's see, this is where I did make a change to the urban agriculture that we've talked about in the past, and it's urban youth agriculture education and urban agriculture community development. There's been a little bit of misunderstanding as far as what that's all about, and there's a large youth education component in that as well. We do have some language on page 8, farmer-led water quality improvement practices. This was brought to me by AgriGrowth, and I believe the governor does have that in his supplementary budget request as well. The rest is rider language. We talked about urban youth on page 9, or urban youth, ag, ed, and community development. On page 9.19, we do have the good food access, $250,000 a year for good food access. I'll talk about a little bit more on that in a bit. We also have a one-time appropriation for Metro State. This is a Representative Sheldon Johnson initiative to fund a greenhouse that's over there. It's already a standing greenhouse. They've raised over $700,000 currently, and we are allocating $500,000 for that. We have, and they work very, very closely with St. Paul Youth. It's quite a remarkable program. Representative Poppy has language in here for farm advocates. Then if you roll over to the rest of the baseline. And, Mr. Chairman, I think, well, so that's all baseline. Russ's baseline until we get to the last page, and we have we're asking the department to do base budget reporting again, and that's online page 20.8, and then you'll see some changes as far as transfer dollars. And what we did there is we took some monies out of the emergency account, and we allocated that to the noxious weed program. I guess with that, I'll stand for questions.
All right. Discussion to House Bill 895 is amended. Any questions for Representative Hamilton? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm curious. This was one that the target provided $1 million for, and the governor's budget was at $10 million, and I'm just trying to figure out here what might have been done that's not being done had there been a larger target. And I, quite frankly, have not heard controversy at all about the bill, but I do remember a week ago we did have some discussion about the target. And I'm just curious, looking at the shifting year, and I know you've got some spending, so that's, we can pick up where some of that is coming from. But let me put it this way. Is there something you'd have liked to have done that's not being done if you'd had a higher target that would have been important, and not to you personally, but to the agricultural community?
Yeah.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Carlson. You know, we did our best to accommodate many of the things that the governor brought forward as well, and we're working off of a sheet that the department gave us at the beginning of the session. Some of the things that we didn't cover, there was an IT investment, and I think that I believe, should be looking at that more as a system-wide thing when it comes to IT investments, meaning all the departments, sounds like they need upgrades for their IT systems. We did not fund that in this bill. The plant pathogens and pests we did, the noxious weeds we did, with the industrial hemp, the governor wanted that, and the pollinator account, we did that. The waste pesticide collection fee increase, we did not do that. The governor wanted us to do that, and we did not. So most of the things we were able to accomplish, maybe not at the same level of funding that the governor was wanting, but I would let Representative Poppy chime in if I speak out of turn, but we didn't have
anybody vote against the bill, to my recollection. I think that we had some pretty strong supporters that came out.
Mr. Chairman, I did make it clear that I hadn't heard much about, quite frankly, any controversy, really. Just was curious, being that it was, if you look at it as a percentage, it was quite a wide range between what the governor's budget provided and what the House budget resolution provided, and I thought it would be important to perhaps ask the question, what was being done. By the way, when you say IT across state government, I would include in that the Minnesota House of Representatives.
Right.
That has to be looked at here as well. And if you talk to some of our IT people, they would chime in, but that's a different topic for a different time. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Halsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I miss it? Did we act on an A-13, or was that just
I don't believe A-13 is going to be offered. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hamilton has spoken correctly about, I think, that it's a very bipartisan bill. It has does include some DFL initiatives as well. But I will say that the department was seeking some more operational dollars. And those are not included, and that they do have some concern about the increase of, you know, providing grants, especially in the urban ag area, and some other initiatives. And I think that that's a concern. I know that blender pumps were also talked about. Emerald Ash Borer was spoken of as well in committee. So I think there are certainly some other areas that had the target been larger, could have been included in the bill. But for the most part, I think it seems to be a fairly balanced bill, but certainly operational costs amount for the department would have been appreciated.
And Representative Hamilton.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Poppy, thank you for that. And I have been in conversations with the Assistant Commissioner as well, because as you recall, we did hold flat on the percentage that they could use for admin here at 4.5%. The Senate did take it up to 6.5%. I've asked the department for some additional explanation on that to answer some of my questions as far as the need and whatnot. And I am committed to working with the department as we move forward. Like I said, the Senate did give them that 2% increase. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Representative Hamilton, any closing comments?
I appreciate your support.
All right. With that, members, Representative Hamilton renews his motion that House Bill 895, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House Bill 895, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Okay, members, next up, the last omnibus bill of the evening is Senate File 803. Representative Cornish, if you will come forward. Okay, so, yeah, members, first of all, I need to move Senate File 803 and then move the substitute the language of House File 896. And members, this is just a procedural motion. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The motion is adopted. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Representative Cornish why don't you go ahead and present your bill, and then we'll take the amendments.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, thank you for saving the best to last. The House File 896, as you know, funds the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Corrections, the judiciary, a number of programs that go into the OJP. Why don't I give you a flyover of the spending highlights, and then I have my experts here in policy and finance that can back me up for any questions you want to go through spreadsheet or line by line, however deep you want to dig. But I'll give you the how we spent $2.2 billion. The $52,765,000 across the judicial branch and agencies for the 1% compensation increase health insurance costs, $20 million for increased inmate care, costs to the Department of Corrections, $15 million for the additional reimbursements to local law enforcement agencies for costs of training. That entails the police training bill that you've heard about. The $5.7 million for enhanced sentences of supervision of sex offenders. $4.1 million to replace the predatory offender registry at BCA. $3.2 million for upgraded technology system to allow all peace officers to access and serve the harassment restraining orders. Over $2 million for Red Wing DOC, the Rape Prevention Act compliance. $2 million to replenish the disaster assistance account. $1.7 million for two new judge units. $1.5 million for expanded mental health services at DOC. $500,000 to extend grants to combat terrorism recruitment. $479,000 for additional sex trafficking prevention grants. It would be not named for the jurisdiction, but would be a competitive grant through the OJP, Office of Justice Programs. $208,000 for the administrative cost of the appraisal for the Appleton Prison to lease to own or purchase. $200,000 in crisis de-escalation training of public safety personnel. That's the one that we've done before, I think, Officer O'Driscoll's. $200,000 to Representative O'Driscoll. $200,000 to support treatment corps, specialty courts. $200,000 for targeted domestic violence prevention and program at DOC. $170,000 for alternatives to incarceration treatment for certain nonviolent substance abuse offenders who violate terms of probation. And $150,000 for nonprofit security grants. Had a number of policy bills and bills that carried fiscal costs. I think we have four or five also from the DFL. And that's for the spending highlights, and that's basically the spending on the bill. Mr. Chair and members, if you would like to know separate policy issues or details, I'll sit for questions.
Okay, thank you, Chair Cornish. Well, members, let's go to some of the amendments first. Representative Davids, I know, has an amendment. Representative Davids moves the A17-0329 amendment. Representative Davids, could you speak to that amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank Representative Cornish for allowing me to present this amendment on this bill in Ways and Means. Now, several years ago, a bill was passed that basically said, and it was overwhelmingly passed in the House. I think it had over 120 votes, and the governor signed the bill. Might have been unanimous in the Senate. Passed overwhelmingly that said that if a not-for-profit or a charity gets a donation, takes it in good faith, that they cannot have it clawed back if later on it was found that the person that made the donation was a crook. And what was happening was, because that bill was passed overwhelmingly and signed into law by the governor, many not-for-profits and many charities were able to stay in business, because what was happening, there was a law firm that was very good at clawing back on gifts that were made previously, unbeknownst to the charity that there was a problem. So the bill said that if the charity knew that, did not know that the gift was given by someone who was of nefarious activities, that they did not have to pay that back, and there's some time limits and so forth. Apparently, there's a judge that was unable to read the law and interpret it, and basically said that it was simply for cash donations, which was never, ever the intent of the legislation. So what this amendment does, it clears up that it also covers other types of donations, not just cash. So just to look at it a little closer here, the purpose of this amendment is to clarify that the law applies to all kinds of gifts, not just cash. Nonprofits often receive gifts of stocks, bonds, notes, and other kinds of property. The bankruptcy court has been interpreting the law to only cover gifts of cash from the debtor, which was never the intent of the law. We're simply seeking clarification consistent with the original intent of the law. Mr. Chairman, I move this amendment and stand for questions.
All right. Davids moves the A17-0329 amendment. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Representative Davids could answer a couple of questions about the proposal. One question is, when they, if they find out that the person who filed bankruptcy kind of knew they were in trouble, knew they were getting ready for bankruptcy, and made a whole bunch of contributions to the charity, kind of to get around some of the bankruptcy laws. You know, we had a car dealer who was doing all sorts of things with their automobiles. We had another business that we now see those folks in federal prison. My question is there any limits if this person is, you know, right on the verge of bankruptcy and then giving those items?
Could you speak into the microphone more directly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Davids, in the event that the person is right before going into bankruptcy, begins giving away large numbers of pieces of property, is there a time limit by which the bankruptcy court could quickly go back in and get some of those pieces back, or does it not matter?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Yes, it does matter. There are some provisions, and Mr. Chairman, I do have someone that could more directly answer that question. I do know we put provisions in where there were some time limits and so forth, so that that exact situation that Representative Hillstrom is explaining would not happen. I do have some folks that could answer that more directly.
Okay. Representative Hillstrom, should I have a witness come forward?
No, Mr. Chair, as long as those protections are in there to keep someone from doing that, quickly giving away their property prior to filing bankruptcy, I don't have a concern.
All right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we might want to have somebody just clarify that, because when I remember the bill from some years ago that was supported by many people around this table, there were some provisions, but I would like that to explain just a little bit better for the record, so I'm
okay.
Speaking correctly.
Could we have a witness come forward on that subject if they're here? Welcome to the committee, sir. Could you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Yes. My name is Grover Sayer. I'm a member of a foundation board that has received gifts in the past. And my testimony would be this, that the law as it's currently written, if a gift was received within 2 years, that gift can be in possibly clawed back. So that's your protection. Representative, I can't see your name, but that would be the protection.
That's fine.
And that's currently in the law.
Representative? Yes, we're fine.
Oh, yes. I appreciate your support.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask the Chair, but maybe I'll ask Representative Davids. There has been times in this committee where some members have raised questions about ways and means dealing with policy. I've had less trouble with us dealing with policy than some members have. But Representative Davids, is this policy or not? And I am not going to be against it because it is, because I think sometimes it goes hand in hand, but I think it's a good example of maybe clarifying as we move forward. I don't want to identify who the member was that was raising questions about policy, but probably some members of the committee know who it was.
Representative Davids?
Any response, I guess, Mr.
Oh, Chairman. Certainly. This is strictly policy.
And I assume, Mr. Chairman, then, that the mover of the amendment has no problem with our dealing with policy in this committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really do, unless it's my amendment.
That's what I thought, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Davids, I remember when you moved this legislation originally, and I know it had to do with a particular situation and a lot of, I recall some of the original background to this. Maybe you said this, but I didn't catch it. The court case where this interpretation was made that you're trying to undo, was that a district court or was that an appellate court or even the Supreme Court?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do not know, what maybe our witness could explain that.
Yes.
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it was a federal bankruptcy court where this decision was made. And essentially, the court is interpreting the statute very narrowly to only include gifts of cash. And often nonprofits receive stocks, bonds, notes, all kinds of things. And so that's the purpose of the amendment, is simply to clarify that the intent was to include all sorts of gifts that might come to a charity or a nonprofit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, this is, I think there might be a little more to this than perhaps it's easy to deal with in this context just as an amendment. Because I'm kind of reading between the lines here, I can only imagine, I usually assume that courts do make these kind of rulings that might be, some people might feel that it's a bit, they're kind of reaching to get to a result. And reading between the lines here, I wonder if that isn't it, because remember, at the same time that Representative Davids is interested in protecting the innocent charity, on the other side of this, we have people who were defrauded whose money this would otherwise be. So I think that those are the two interests that are kind of facing off here, if I'm understanding the situation correctly. And so, to me, it wouldn't be absolutely obvious that the intent was that it be all property, because a charity, obviously, if it was given cash and it is going to be using that cash immediately, would be in a really different position than if it was, say, some other kind of asset that might be a long-term asset. So I'm not so sure that this is actually the right thing to do. I appreciate that Representative Davids wants to protect charities, and I think we all would, but I think we might also have an interest in protecting people who were defrauded, whose property this would otherwise be, because I think that is the trade-off that's being made here. And maybe the testifier, who obviously will know much more about this than I do, could respond to that, because I didn't come in here prepared to debate this. I just want to really understand what we're doing here, given that we are talking about, I think, people who were defrauded.
Mr. Sayer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative. Gifts that come to charities are typically liquidated and then donated for the purpose of the charity. And so ultimately they become cash. It is not typically the purpose of a nonprofit or a charity to hold money for investment for long periods of time and anticipate gains and that sort of thing. And so in most situations, the charity will receive a gift and then use it for its purposes. And if that gift is then later clawed back, that charity no longer has the money. And so what you're actually creating is another set of victims. And those victims are those that have donated to the charity subsequent to the date of the gift, whose gifts are now being used to pay a fraudster. And so it's a very difficult situation. There are folks that suffer all around the room whenever there's a fraud that's involved.
So, Mr.
Representative Lee.
Thank you. And if I could just ask the witness, though, but can you kind of lay out the other side here, though? And I know I hear you, and I think those are serious concerns. I really do. But am I correct that the other side of this lawsuit would be people who were defrauded who are saying, wait a minute, that was my property, I want it back? Am I right? As you say, we're creating more victims, but there are already victims.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. It's one of these situations where, yes, there are, it's hard, the funds are gone, so we can't make everyone whole. It's impossible. So how far down the road, how many more victims do you want to create? I mean, that's the crux of the matter. And some of the protection that's in the law, if the charity or the nonprofit knew or had reason to know that the money was created or generated through a fraud, then it's subject to being clawed back. So we're talking about a charity that has no knowledge, simply received a gift, and now is being asked, perhaps many years later, to return those funds which it no longer has. And so we're simply asking for protection for that. But also, the court, in its opinions, has said that the original legislation was confusing. So we're trying to clarify that confusion.
So,
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that, but that obviously that the situation only occurs where the charity is innocent, too. I get that. If the charity knew, anybody who has an idea they're getting tainted money is supposed to not take the money. We know that. But I guess what I would just say to this, Mr. Chair and members, is that it seems like that the way to handle the situation would be to draw a distinction that is a little different than what form the money comes in. It would seem like the more fair thing would be to draw some kind of a distinction about whether the charity, in fact, you know, doesn't have money anymore, whether it was an asset that's essentially gone, or whether it's something that, you know, could actually be recovered. I mean, I don't know what that distinction would be, but I'm not really sure that the way this is structured is really the right thing. I'm not sure we're here tonight in a really good position to evaluate this fully. I just want to say that I don't think it's as clear-cut as all that, and I really do have some concerns about it, because the people who would be on the other side of this are not here to advocate for themselves. Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, is the name Sayre?
Yes.
Mr. Sayre, you said that the property is typically disposed of or converted, but typically doesn't mean all property. And I was sitting here trying to distinguish. I was on the board of a charity that received, they started an auto repair program, and they received as a charitable donation virtually all the equipment that you would need for a fairly sophisticated auto repair program. Now, there was never any question about an illegal donation, but that would be an example, though, of a charity keeping property for a purpose that I'm no longer on the board and haven't been for a few years, but they probably still have the equipment there years later. Mm-hmm. So is there a distinction under this amendment or under the case law if the charity still has the property in their possession and hasn't converted it to cash for the operation or whatever the charity happens to do for their worth?
Mr. Sarah.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. I do not believe that distinction exists in the law the way it's written, but the purpose of the amendment is to simply clarify that the intent of the original law was to include things other than just cash, like bonds, stocks, and other things, which typically come to charities and come to nonprofits. Appreciated stock, for instance, comes to a nonprofit. Then the nonprofit sells that stock and uses the proceeds for its mission. That's typically what happens. Your auto example is sort of the exception to the rule, I think.
Well, Mr. Representative Paulson, I sat here for a while. In fact, even just during the brief conversation, I thought of some other situations where land has been donated for various purposes and is held by a charitable group. I'm just thinking that as this moves forward, if the property were still in the possession of the charity, that perhaps there should be a distinction in the law between what is, and I understand what you're trying to say, if the dollars or the property has been converted and is used for program and what have you and has been expended, that would create a problem, as Representative Liebling has pointed out, really on both sides, the charity and the individuals that were perhaps swindled or whatever the situation might be. But there are some instances where there could be some real property that's being held by the charity, land donated for a given purpose. It didn't come about, but I know of a foundation that was offered a fairly attractive piece of land to build a hockey rink on. That never materialized, but had there been some history, you know, that would have still been being held. I'm just thinking that if this moves forward, perhaps there should be a distinction between property that is still held and that being available for the clawback as opposed to property that has been expended. And if I thought some more, I could come up with even a few more examples of where, because sometimes charities receive something for a specific purpose and they hold it for that purpose. There's maybe even an agreement to use it as a park or something. You know, that's what I'm saying. Maybe the author of the amendment might think about some of that if it moves forward.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I listen to this, it feels as though maybe the amendment's misplaced and it should have been in civil law and not public safety. Maybe that's part of the struggle we're having here, that it's not a good fit in this particular bill, maybe.
Any other discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the A17, aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carries.
Okay, members, next we have some other amendments. The first amendment is, I think, a technical amendment. Representative Cornish moves the A11 amendment. Representative Cornish.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, the A11 amendment is a technical amendment. It has to do with a number of ERT teams, and we added one, and so we change it from 3 to 4 on page 4, line 34. Delete 3 and insert 4.
Any discussion of the A11 amendment? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just encourage members to vote.
All right. This other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the A11 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A11 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, next is the A13 amendment. The chair will move the A13 amendment. Then, members, the A13 amendment is a technical amendment, but it's a technical amendment about a controversial item. And this relates to the language in the bill on page 69 regarding protesters and freeways. And it further defines the word freeway, and it basically does that by simply saying right now the definition of a freeway is a divided highway that has only access and egress points from entrance and exit ramps. But the question is that you've got some freeways like Highway 10 leaving the Twin Cities that start out that way as a freeway but later on become something else. And so if there was an action under the law, is Highway 10 a freeway depending on where it is? And so the language simply makes it more clear that it's defined as a freeway in between those ramps. So someone can't say, well, even though you might have been blocking the freeway just in the Twin Cities, the fact that it doesn't have exit and entrance ramps up by St. Cloud means that you can't not be prosecuted for it. So, members, that's the amendment. It just further clarifies that a little bit. Is there any discussion of the A13 amendment? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to clarify that this is actually narrowing what sections can be prosecuted, because it's only the portions that have exits and entrance ramps. So it would only be the portion that has the exits and entrance ramps, for example, on Highway 10, not the portions that have stoplights.
And the portions in between the exit and entrance ramps. But, yes, if you get up to St. Cloud, you couldn't be stopped because it's not a freeway as defined here when it gets up Highway 10, for example, by St. Cloud. Further discussion of the A13 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A13 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A13 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, there are a couple of other amendments. I think they're Representative Hillstrom's amendments.
They are.
Representative Hillstrom, which one do you want to take first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will take the A1 amendment first.
Okay, the A1 amendment. Representative Hillstrom moves the A1 amendment. Representative Hillstrom, can you define or describe the amendment?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, members, in this bill, It repeals a statute, a law that's been on the books for a very long time. In the event that someone is involved in a crash and they are the victim in that case, and the court is considering who's responsible and how much that the person who's responsible should pay, currently the jury is not permitted to hear whether the person who is injured, if they were wearing their seatbelt or not. We know that there have been many instances, and Mr. Chair, I have a handout that I could pass out about a crash that happened in your area, actually, in the St. Cloud, where a large truck driver ran into a motor vehicle, injuring or killing folks that were inside. Members, the provision that's in the bill would say that the jury could consider whether or not the people who died were wearing their seatbelt in determining how much the insurance company should pay. We don't allow juries to hear whether or not the truck driver had insurance, and this would undo a law that says that the jury shouldn't hear whether or not the victim was wearing their seatbelt. Basically, it's a seatbelt gag rule that is being undone. Members, if you're hit by a drunk driver, whether or not you were wearing a seatbelt, if you did nothing wrong, should not influence how much money you receive. You were injured, and it was of no fault of your own. If you adopt the provision that's in this bill, what you're doing is making it so insurance companies will pay less, more cases will go to court and not settle. And I know that to be true because the fiscal note says it costs an entire judge in order to have this provision in the bill. So I delete the section that undoes the gag rule, and I allow the court to keep the judge that they had asked for. Members, our judiciary has said that they are two judges short. This would allow them to keep both of those judges and not overburden the judiciary with another amount of court cases that I don't believe result in a just result. It simply is a windfall for insurance companies. And so I would ask members to support the removal of that language.
Okay, discussion of the A1 amendment, Representative Cornish.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, it's Representative Hilstrom's opinion that it should not be allowed. I believe that it should. It doesn't weight the case. It just allows something to be entered that isn't currently allowed to be entered in consideration of the damages. And this bill came through with merit through our committee, and on here I would be disappointed to take a bill completely out of one of our members. It's progress through the committees. It is controversial, but I think it would merit bringing to the floor for more discussion and an amendment at that time instead of taking it out here. So.
Other discussion to the amendment? All right, all in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion does not prevail. The A1 amendment is not adopted. Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have the A10 amendment, and this amendment I would ask for a roll call on. Mr. Chair, currently the Department of Corrections has made it very, very clear that they are not in need of the Appleton Prison. The Appleton Prison is a 1,600-bed facility. There's language in this bill that would require $200,000 be spent to find out what the value of that prison would be. And then there's language that says that in the event the commissioner needs any additional beds, they must either contract to run the prison, leasing it from Appleton or the private company, or they must purchase it. Members, anytime you put in a law that says you must purchase something, the price of that piece of property goes up. And in order to operate this facility, it would cost $52 million a biennium. $52 million in addition to the language that you have currently in this bill and the amount of money that you spend. It isn't something that the Department of Corrections says they need. It is something that they oppose. And this bill would delete the requirement of the acquisition of the Appleton Prison. It would delete the money, and it would actually ban the use of private prisons in the state of Minnesota.
Okay, discussion of the A10 amendment, Representative Cornish.
Well, this has been talked about ad nauseum for some time, and I hate to tell a unit of government in Appleton what they can and can't do with their prison and put a never on there. And I think this fiscal note was dreamed up by people that didn't like the idea of the prison and wanted their own prison to take care of it. And the commissioner or the Department of Correction has been very biased against this prison. We've got a state-of-the-art facility out there waiting to be used if it's need to be, and I just don't believe that this is a proper amendment to just exclude that from the possibility. And we have no idea in our bill as written with a lease to own and staffed by DOC if we would lease it or own it, and so I think this is an unreasonable amendment.
Other discussion to the A-10 amendment? All right. The clerk will take the roll on the A-10 amendment.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Cornish?
No.
Representative Davids? Representative Dean? Representative Detmer?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Fabian?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Gunther?
No.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Hausman?
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Knobloch?
Aye.
Representative Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Mornis?
No.
Representative Kowalski?
Yes.
Representative Poppy?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
There being 12 ayes and 13 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Cornish, members, discussion to the bill as amended. Discussion to the bill. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, given the target that Representative Cornish was given, which I wish had been higher, Representative Cornish did his best to fund the items in this bill that that go a long way to protecting public safety. But, Mr. Chair and members, there is a provision in the state government finance bill that negatively impacts this bill that will also negatively impact others. We heard from the tax court that they needed to do a case management system, and with the target Representative Cornish had, he was not able to fund it. However, in the state government finance bill, it says that in the event that there's a savings from open positions, that they cannot use that savings for any other purpose other than to fill the positions. So we, between the two bills, are placing our judicial system, and in particular the tax court, in a situation where they can't fund the very system that they need to operate, and they can't even fill it by capturing savings by vacant positions because of the language that's in the state government finance bill. So hopefully between now and the end of this session, this bill will only get better and actually allow us to have a public safety addressed, because it is a core function of government. So I look forward to working with Representative Cornish between now and the time that this bill will maybe get signed.
Other discussion of the bill? Representative Cornish, any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chair, members, just thank you for your time and wish for your support and your vote.
All right. With that, members, Representative Cornish renews his motion that House File 896 as Senate File 803 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Senate File 803 as amended is referred to the General Register. Members, that concludes our business for the evening. I'm anticipating that we will be meeting tomorrow night to take up the higher education bill. Seeing no further questions, the meeting is adjourned.